This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Enterprise on BFM 89.9. And this is Enterprise Biz Byte specifically. And I'm Christine Wong, and I'm joined in the studio by
Frida Liu.
And today we're talking about ads. And basically, if you think your ads are doing enough, they're not. The 2021 Pagefair Adblock report shows that Asia is the leading ad blocker user globally, with the majority of users citing bad advertising experiences as their motivation for using ad blockers. So the key change marketers need to make is actually looking for unconscious bias and actively championing diversity and inclusion in their campaigns. We'll be talking about that today. And if you want to be part of the conversation, you can reach us on Twitter at BFM Radio or on WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Fair to say that the way that ads work is changing, and this report shows that we're simply not tolerant of ads that don't work for us. So according to the report, in the span of a year, mobile ad blocking grew 10% to reach 586 million users, and desktop ad blocking grew 8% to reach 257 million users. 63% of top US Comscore publishers reviewed in this report were using some type of ad block countermeasure, up from 56% last year. And at least in the US, 67% of internet users think that the quality of advertising on the web has either declined or stayed the same in recent years. But it's not that we're against ads in general. We're just against bad ads. Adblock users are twice as likely to accept light, non-intrusive ads rather than engage with adblock walls or pay for content. And user adoption of acceptable ads is growing fast, reaching 218 million users in 2020, with 435% growth on mobile over the last 2 years.
Right, 435%. So what's stopping advertising from being, well, good? Profit and performance targets are the biggest enemy of creativity in advertising, according to an exclusive campaign survey of more than 1,200 industry executives around the world. 38% of readers in a global survey identified profit and performance targets as the biggest challenge that they face in terms of producing creative work. And 20% said the talent pipeline, including the lack of diversity and inclusion, was the biggest challenge. This insight couldn't be coming at a more pivotal moment. So global ad expenditure bounced back in 2021 to above pre-pandemic levels in a sign of the industry's creativity, resilience, ability to adapt. But there are fresh concerns about growth because of rising inflation and, you know, the war in Ukraine.
Yeah, and balancing these competing needs of purpose and profit is an issue that boggles many marketers in the APAC region, as it does the agency teams who do the work. Because if purpose-driven messaging drives profit, should brands be leveraging purpose-driven message to drive profit? Based on recent Edelman Trust research conducted in the past 2 years, consumers are getting increasingly skeptical of capitalist agendas, and the sentiment extends to brands and the quote-unquote good that they purport to do. So, for instance, brands that shout about their sustainable operations may simultaneously be running marketing campaigns promoting a culture of consumerism around their products, right? So what you're saying, what you're doing don't match up, and consumers will call you out on it, is basically what we're saying. So a brand needs to earn the authority to run a bold creative-led campaign. But more often than not, we only see these purpose campaigns that merely scratch the surface, or they appear to be preachy or contrived, and inevitably they fail to leave a lasting impact.
Or not a good lasting impact, Susie Golding, director at Mullenlowe Sustainability, is of the opinion that not all brands should align to an issue where they have no credible business reason to do so. So profit and purpose aren't in conflict with each other. Companies need to make money. And not every brand needs a purpose beyond the need they address as a product or service, but every brand seems to want to jump on a purpose bandwagon, and many don't do it well, often limited to a single campaign and judged by people who get excited by that. And of course, it's imperative that brands and agencies at their own house in order before executing purpose campaigns with any real credibility or conviction. Mark Elwood, the executive creative director of Leo Burnett, says the old saying, your values aren't values until they cost you something, is being soundly tested. So people want businesses to sell good products and be good corporate citizens. Shareholders similarly want businesses to turn a profit without compromising the planet. So it's not beyond our wit to make this happen.
So of course it's key that brands make sure that they're rolling out purposeful marketing for the right reasons. Consumers, like I said earlier, are quick to call out what we're calling purpose washing. And with the amount of awareness around it, there's really no excuse for brands who slip up. PJ Pereira, who is a creative chairman at Pereira Odell, a full service agency in San Francisco and New York, says that when everyone starts to do the same thing, it loses its punch. And as purpose runs the risk of becoming more performative than impactful, creative ideas and formats are losing their impact. Then, in addition, the staggering job losses and economic pain that have come across costs during the pandemic have reinforced this purpose of advertising as just keeping the economy moving and people employed. So while brands should continue to be inspired by higher purposes, often relaying practical product benefits is the most purposeful and helpful thing they can do for consumers, especially in times of economic hardship.
So, but if you can nail those purpose-driven, honest, authentic messages in campaigns, you can expect success. Many studies around the globe reveal that millennials and Gen Z are more likely to buy products from brands that do good. Even if brands look to communicate only a doing good bit, done correctly, it will lead to business success. The business goal is an outcome of the action. If you do the action of doing good and communicate right, the business goal will achieve itself. And while doing good used to be a corporate social responsibility cause in the past, now with the ESG goals that many brands have signed up to it, it's become imperative for them to create a sustainable business from source to consumer. So it can't be like a one-off brief of doing good. Yeah. We're only going to do good this month, this week. So a mainstream brand can't fake it. You can't create campaigns specifically for Pride Month or Mother's Day with a doing good message. The main purpose is to build into the DNA of the brand. To add to that, just being good can be boring, so it needs a clever idea to become infectious. Mm-hmm. In short, people no longer want to say they buy the same brand as you. It's about believing the same brand as you.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know about you, Frida, but I honestly, when I was reading the report, I was like, I'm not surprised that Asia is the leading user of ad blockers, because I use ad blockers all the time. I make it a point where I'm privileged enough to even afford like YouTube Premium because I don't want to see ads on my videos. There was this tweet I saw a while ago as well of, like, for example, someone tweeted YouTube and said, hey, you know, could you disable ads for videos that are about first aid? Because if, like, someone's choking and there's a 30-second ad before it, that's not going to be very, you know, helpful. But it's that sort of thing of, you know, what kinds of ads are we willing to see? What kinds of ads are we allowing into our lives? And at the moment, I would intend to agree that most of the ads that I see, like especially the digital ads, they either don't apply to me or they're intrusive. So it's like, you know, I understand that they serve a purpose, but...
Right, but and this whole conversation is so interesting because I'm just reading into this, right? When when you try to do something and it's just good and it's not back to your brand, and the thing is, it's not just like, it's got to be incorporated into the company culture. That's who you are, an element. For example, I was just talking to the people from the Body Shop yesterday, right? And this is, you know them from years ago, working with the women, getting the shea butter, that sort of thing. So whenever they do something, you know that's the brand story.
Yeah, they've had a very strong brand message and ethos for a long time. So that's been established, right? But then you think about there, you know, there's certainly some campaigns out there that I like, that I can remember being like, I'm pretty sure you don't mean that, you know?
Yeah. But you know, but also at the same time, I know it's not too late to get back to, okay, maybe we need to look at how our business can be a little bit about doing good, right? Mm-hmm. And for them to revisit it and get back to that, and that become part of your DNA.
Exactly.
Moving forward. Then your campaign makes sense.
But I think the key here is that you have to mean it.
Yes.
You can't just do this weird token thing. You just can't do it. I mean, I can think of even, let's say, Dove, for example, they've had a few misses here and there, but overall they have had the same core message of like, learn to love your body and all this stuff. So, you know, if you are consistent and your actions match your words, then that's a purposeful.
And the thing with Dove was, that's not how they started, right? It was only like, I mean, when they started,
they developed that,
and then it became part of their DNA, right? So it wasn't when we first knew Dove, that wasn't the branding, but it evolved.
There's definitely a chance to incorporate that, for sure. So we will take a short break, but we will also, after that, have a guest on the line to speak to us about their thoughts. We'll be speaking to Divya Acharya, Head of Solutions and Innovation Strategy for Zaxis APAC. So do stay tuned to Enterprise Biz Bytes for more of that conversation here on BFM 89.9.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes. I'm Christine Wong and I've been joined by
Frida Liu.
And today we're talking about ads and why we are the leading ad blockers globally here in Asia, talking about what could improve that experience. And that's primarily diversity and inclusion. So if you want to get in touch with us about this topic, we are on WhatsApp 018-789-8899. We're also on Twitter at BFM Radio. Joining us for this conversation is Divya Acharya, Head of Solutions and Innovation Strategy at Zaxis APAC. Thanks so much for being patient and staying with us on the line, Divya. Now, as I mentioned before the break, the 2021 PageFair AdBlock report shows that Asia is the leading ad blocker user globally, but that we are willing to actually receive quote-unquote good ads. We're tolerant of some good ads. So first of all, what makes a quote-unquote bad ad?
Bad ad, I think, is a bit of a loose term. I'm going to break it down. Within digital advertising, we think from the lens of, okay, let's take the word bad. B for brand safety. Is the ad being shown within content or contextually on a page that you want your brand to be associated with? For example, showing an ad alongside a video with violence might not be brand safe. Let's take A. A is for, is the ad viewable? That is the advertiser being charged for an ad that wasn't viewed? A banner on a website, but very below the page you're scrolling through, so you haven't even seen it really. Or there's a lot of ad clutter on your website and you haven't even noticed the 10 ads that are there while you're reading your article. And I think lastly, is there fraud? Did a human view your ad or was it a bot?
Okay, Divya, you know, what are some concepts around marketing and advertising that have since been, you know, outdated or misunderstood?
So in my opinion, I don't think anything is really outdated. The advertising, think of the advertising industry having a lot of similarities with the fashion industry. I know they don't really come to mind, right? But in advertising, just like in fashion, everything comes back in vogue. For example, using an example, out-of-home ads. So out-of-home ads are a technical term for those large billboards that you see when you walk around. Those were considered outdated. You know, all ads are digital. Who sees those billboards? Everybody's looking at their phones. But now it's the last major advertising channel to go digital. So everything in the industry reinvents itself and is back in vogue.
So we kind of go in cycles, I suppose. So Divya, how has the advertising world's relationship with diversity and inclusion shifted, especially over the past few years?
Yeah, so I think it's observed in every industry. There's a lot more healthy conversation on D&I in our industry too. I recall stats from a women's leadership program that I attended recently, which stated in APAC, 50% of the managerial roles were filled by women as opposed to any other region within Group M. I think the key is not just diversity in workforce, but also is it inclusive? And for me as a woman, having women in managerial and C-suite roles is the definition of inclusion. And I'm proud to say within Zaxis, we have women represented in every functional pillar, including what are traditionally considered the techie ones. Look at me, I'm the head of product. We have data scientists who are women. We have coders who are women. And I love that about where I work. I see a huge change. Dove, for example, is a brand I think that's very clearly led the way on that, on including diversity in ads. And I'm seeing that slowly cascade to all brands, especially since the BLM, the Black Lives Matter movement. You can see that Nike is doing some great work on that as well. And yeah, I think there's been a huge change in the last few years. I think APAC has always had representation, but I'm seeing it globally as well.
You know, that said, a lot of campaigns that attempt to be inclusive fail. So what is the obstacle there that corrupts the good intentions behind attempts at purposeful campaigns?
Yeah, I think a good example of that would be the Kendall Jenner Pepsi ad, which there was a lot of good intention there, but, you know, it didn't land as well with certain audiences, despite it being an attempt to acknowledge macro events. I think this is where representation and authenticity comes in. When choosing an influencer to carry your brand, you need to ensure, are they representative of the audience you're looking to touch? Is there authenticity in their voice? Many consumers, I think particularly those in the younger generation, expect more from brands and won't engage with content that they deem is too polished or too fake. So I think representation of minority and having an authentic voice is important.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, again, as you mentioned before the break as well, it's that marriage of purpose as well as the actual impact. So, Divya, if you know consumers are more savvy nowadays, how should advertisers be building their audience profiles?
In today's world of digital advertising, you know, with a combination of data and tech, after obtaining user consent, audiences are built. And then profile or profiling, I don't think I quite like that term. I would say our world today has shifted to where we're looking at cohorts of people. And in my opinion, that sufficient level of granularity without compromising user privacy. And then we target based on general interests and what is the content that you are reading on a website or the YouTube video that you're watching, and then try to reach our audiences.
Right. So, you know, at the end of the day, advertisers and marketers are people too. So as much as we strive for D&I, we may have our own subtext that seeps through. How do we look to reduce unconscious bias in advertising as much as possible?
Unconscious bias training is mandatory at WPP for every employee. The content is regularly updated to ensure we fully understand the ever-evolving spectrum of unconscious bias. And that being said, I think in general, there's another way to tackle it is by letting AI crunch massive amounts of data, more so than the human mind ever can, to make recommendations. But ultimately, it's a human hand on the wheel steering that. The decision making is human, but bias can be reduced by introducing machine learning to that process.
Interesting. Divya, could you go into that a little bit? How exactly does a newer technology like machine learning and artificial intelligence play a role in unconscious biases in advertising?
Okay, another good question. It's a double-edged sword. AI is only as good as the data that we feed it and how we train it. Think of it as garbage in, garbage out. And that famous example of how there was a recruitment AI that had the same unconscious bias as the coder in reading out resumes, right? So in advertising specifically, data-driven creatives can take some amount of bias out of the system to show the right message to the right audience at the right time. And I think this is where ethical AI also plays a role. And I see a lot of movement around this in the recent years, and I think that's great to see on how are we sourcing the data that we feed to into our AI systems, and is that data, has it been cleaned up, has bias been removed from that data, and only then to get I would say quality recommendations that helps save a human's time and narrow down your options to make that decision.
So, you know, what is an example of programmatic advertising that managed to overcome biases?
So compared to traditional approaches in marketing and advertising, programmatic allows advertisers to better understand their markets and identify niches that may otherwise be neglected, such as marketing segments like gaming moms. I think when we think gaming, we think of coders, male coders, teenagers sitting away in a dark room in front of a screen all day long, versus data has shown us that it's a lot of moms on their phone that take short breaks and use gaming to de-stress. Or automotive brands targeting primarily to men, despite the fact that women also typically make car purchasing decisions.
Yeah, definitely. Very interesting. And I think, yeah, looking actually at your real targets, right? I think that's really interesting. But thank you so much. That was Divya Acharya, Head of Solutions and Innovation Strategy at Zaxis APAC. I mean, what did you think of her points? So what really stood out to you from her insights there?
I know at the end of the day, right, when we ask whether has it changed or outdated, I don't, you know, it doesn't, right? Maybe the medium of relaying that message now has changed, but really, at the end of the day, you want to still reach out to your target audience. We've got better tools for it now, the technology.
I do think as well, though, that I think our conception of demographic has shifted a little bit. Maybe not the maybe not the term itself, but, you know, we're looking more for, like she mentioned, like gaming moms, right? Normally, I think in the past, it would have just been like the age groups or gender or, you know, so on and so forth, but not really like their behavior. And I think that's what we're aiming for right now with advertising, is addressing consumer behavior rather than, you know, their like stats.
You know, the other point with the unconscious bias and all that, right? And just like, it's like a minefield, right? Sometimes you feel like it's correct, and yet it's some things just don't work with some people.
Which again is, it drives the point home of you need to include more people in the process, in the creation process, right? You need to get diverse and inclusive, people in every single step of the process to create a diverse product.
You remember a couple of years ago, there was this blatant advertising about whitening products, right? Mm. And then the person was saying there's nothing wrong in it. And then, you know, and here's the thing, right? That people do buy these products.
Yeah.
Right? And just because they may not say they want whitening products, but really they do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think that's definitely something to navigate. And hopefully marketers out there can take this as a little bit of a thought experiment, really, for what they would like to do. And that does, however, bring us to the end of the show, though. And again, thanks to Divya for her insights on this. Don't go anywhere. After the 1 p.m. news bulletin is the Breakfast Grill replay with Angelica Chan, country manager for Malaysia for Traveloka, as they have grown over the past decade into a $3 billion U.S. dollar unicorn with presences across Southeast Asia and Australia. So the Breakfast Grill sat down with her to talk about how the Malaysian outfit fits into the broader growth picture for them. That's all coming up shortly. On behalf of myself and Frida Liu, this has been Enterprise Biz Bytes on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.